So one of the values that we have in this community is to have a diversity of voices that open the scriptures. And so this morning we're going to have Kelly Cutbirth, and she's going to open the scriptures together with us. And so Kelly heads up our partnerships team here at Vox, and her team, they help connect us to partners here within the city and globally. And she's a part of a family. She's married to Stephen Cutbirth. She has two daughters, Amelia and Clara. And so let's welcome her up this morning.
Thank you. I was actually feeling more nervous than usual before speaking this morning, and then I walked in and the projector wasn't working, and it was almost like it just made me laugh a little bit. Like, okay, like if this is the worst thing that happens, it's going to be okay. We can get through this. So this morning we're going to talk about our hearts, which feels fitting since some of us probably celebrated Valentine's Day last week. Maybe you gave a heart-shaped card to someone. But when we talk about hearts, what are we really talking about? I think we use the word heart to refer to a bunch of different things, actually. So as we get started this morning, why don't you turn to a neighbor just really quickly and share what you think about when you use or hear the word heart. What comes to mind? Okay, I'm back on. So what are some things, if you want to shout out some answers, what comes to mind when you hear the word heart? What are some different ways we use this word? Empathy. Empathy, yeah.
Heart disease.
Heart disease, yeah, I thought of that too. Anything else? What?
Take heart.
Take heart.
Heartburn.
Heartburn.
Courage.
Passion.
Emotional descriptor,
love,
feelings,
yes. See, I think hearts are interesting because they refer to both spirit and body. There's the physical heart that's beating inside each of us right now, but we also say things like the heart of the matter to refer to those kind of intangible values we hold most dear. We use it synonymous with love or the soul. I also thought of the heart of Te Fiti from the movie Moana. Which we're in a heavy Moana phase in our house right now. We listen to the soundtrack just about every day. Anytime one of us says, "You're welcome," we break out in song. And so if you haven't seen this movie, I recommend it. My husband and I actually watched it before or after our daughter went to sleep. So I think it's for everyone, not just those of you with kids. The movie begins with Moana's grandmother, Grandma Tala, telling the creation story, and she tells about the heart of Te Fiti, which we did have a clip of, but I think we're going to play the audio of, so you'll hear her describing a story and maybe just imagine if you haven't seen it before.
In the beginning, there was only ocean. Until the mother island emerged, Te Fiti. Her heart held the greatest power ever known. It could create life itself. And Te Fiti shared it with the world. But in time, some began to seek Te Fiti's heart. They believed if they could possess it, the great power of creation would be theirs.
See, some of you noticed you can actually see it on the screen up there. So if you guys in the back want to take some of these seats, you can see the actual slides. But so as the movie continues, Te Fiti, this creator goddess, her heart is stolen by the demigod Maui. And without her heart, she stops creating. She can't sustain life anymore. All things begin to die and a darkness spreads from island to island. Her heart is where her creativity, her life force was held. It's both a physical thing that was taken from her, but it also represented her spirit, her energy, her ability to create. So keep that in mind when you think of heart in our passage today. It's our creative, God-given life force. That divine spark, our truest selves, which we use to love, create, hurt, connect, deceive. So today we're continuing in our season of Epiphany, and this morning we're going to be in Jeremiah chapter 17. So if you have your phone and you can pull up the Bible and want to read along, but I will read it for us. And my hope this morning is that we'll uncover some of what God wants us to know about our own hearts. So it's Jeremiah 17, verses 5 through 8. So read along or listen along. This is what the Lord said. Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. That person will be like a bush in the wastelands. They will not see prosperity when it comes. They will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in a salt land where no one lives. But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit. So our passage begins with a description of a heart turned away from God. It says, "Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh, and whose heart turns away from the Lord." I kind of imagine a heart turned away in hiding, because I think it can feel safer and easier to rely on our own strength and hide what's really going on than to offer all of who we are to God. I do this all the time. Just last weekend, Stephen was out of town, and so my mom came to stay with me and visit and help me with my two girls. And what I really needed was rest. I was tired, and I needed to spend some time preparing for this homily. But instead of dealing with how I felt and asking for what I needed, I focused on my to-do list. I decided I could get a whole bunch of things done. I ran errands. I was constantly on the move. I was really productive and efficient, which is not at all how I feel when I'm with my daughters most of the time. But there was a cost to all that hustling, to the way I hid my real needs. I think I missed out on the joy and the good God was offering me. In Jeremiah, it said like this, "That person will be like a bush in the wastelands. They will not see prosperity when it comes. They will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in a salt land where no one lives." And the word prosperity here is translated from the Hebrew word tov. It means good, beautiful. It's the same word used in Genesis 1 when God created the world and it was good. Isn't that beautiful? God desires good for us, beauty. In fact, God created a whole beautiful world full of beautiful things and beautiful people out of God's great love for us. But we get stuck in a wasteland when we hide our hearts, our truest selves. So true to this passage, when my mom left on Sunday, I was exhausted. Mentally and physically, I was spent. By Sunday afternoon, I got my kids to bed for a nap, poured myself a glass of wine, took the whole Tupperware of cookies, laid on the couch, and put on To All the Boys I've Loved Before on Netflix. Instead of enjoying the good that was being offered to me during my mom's visit, I hustled. I tried to use my own strength to get a bunch of stuff done, hiding my need for rest and quiet. And I think we all do this sometimes. We're afraid to ask for what we need or reveal what's really going on, and so we hide. But when we're turned away, we miss out on the good God might be offering us. So as a spiritual practice, try asking yourself this week how you might be hiding your heart from yourself, from God, from those around you. Pay attention and just see what you notice. As we continue in verses 7 and 8, we see what happens when we can trust God with our true selves, when we turn our whole hearts toward God. It says, "But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit." It's interesting because the imagery is actually the same. It talks about the heat, drought, kind of a desert scene. But the difference is the presence of water. We have roots reaching the stream. The promise isn't that if we turn our hearts toward God, we won't have to endure the heat. It's that even when we face desolate places, we're not alone. We have nourishment. And often the waters that nourish us come from people around us, God moving in community. One story that comes to mind is a church in the Netherlands that held a 96-day liturgy to protect a refugee family that was being sheltered at the church. The family had fled persecution in Armenia and had been living in the Netherlands for over 8 years. And then they received a deportation order last fall, and the church offered them shelter, and they took advantage of an obscure Dutch law that forbids the police from interrupting a church service. So over 1,000 clergy members came, and they kept round-the-clock liturgy going, switching shifts in the middle of the night. And over 250,000 people from all over the country signed a petition calling for the government to change the law that would have called for the family's deportation. And actually, just a few weeks ago, the organizers got word that the family and 700 others would have their cases reassessed. They would potentially get to stay. This family was facing the heat. Their lives were at risk of being uprooted again, and God moved through community to be their stream of nourishment. Isn't that beautiful? And I think we do this for each other all the time, in everyday moments too. Anne Lamott says it like this. She says, we have to make ourselves available to one another, or we can't experience goodness. The wind is blowing, but because we are in this together, we have hope, most days. What helps is that we're not all crazy on the same day. One of us remembers and reminds the rest of us that when it is really dark, you can see the stars. She says, we believe grace is stronger than evil and sin. We believe love is stronger than hate. That the divine is bigger than all the huge egos simmered together in a bloviation stew, and this makes us laugh. And laughter is hope. We believe and hope that we will get through these terrifying times. It gets the way we laugh together and bring each other out of hiding, turning our hearts back to God in big and small ways that we can help nourish each other. I wonder, what was the last time someone gave you the gift of nourishment? As a spiritual practice, try to remember what that felt like. What did that person do that was nourishing for you? How might you offer that to someone this week? Now, it would be much tidier to end our conversation today here before these last two verses. There's actually two more verses in our passage. Because all my ideas and themes as I was preparing for today, they stop and pivot here. Because Jeremiah literally interrupts God. But I hope you'll stick with me, because this is also my favorite part of the passage. So God was just saying what happens when our hearts are turned toward him. And then Jeremiah says, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? He stops and says, what's the point? Don't you see? Our hearts are too broken and deceitful. He's hopeless. And this is so comforting to me, because I know that feeling. I feel that hopelessness when I think about our world and when I think about the state of my own heart sometimes. I think we all have those areas in our lives that make us feel so frustrated and hopeless, whether it's work, school, a relationship with a friend, or maybe a family member. Other than any time I listen to the news, the area in my life right now that's bringing me face to face with this feeling is parenthood. It's not that I don't love my kids and love being a parent, but I feel like such a hopeless mess sometimes. One of my daughters is in a serious teenager phase, and her big feelings and her stubbornness bring out the worst in me. Like when she loses it over a TV show or trying to wash her hair or the wrong snack or whatever, I end up the one storming out of the room and closing the door behind me, because I don't know how to have the patience that this relationship is requiring of me right now. And Jeremiah's honesty with God here gives me permission to be honest about my own emotions, no matter how much I'd rather hide them. It encourages me to bring my whole heart, my true self, to the conversation. And I think that's what God offers us. She says, "But I, God, search the heart and examine the mind. I get to the heart of the human. I get to the root of things. I treat them as they really are, not as they pretend to be." That's how God responds to Jeremiah. And this is what I want to offer my children. Love that takes the time to know who they really are and reminds them that they are loved and known, even when we're all a total mess, which is a lot of the time. It's an invitation for our hearts to be known, even in the midst of our darkness. And this is what Moana offers to Fiti. So as we close, I was going to show a clip from the end that was going to be a total spoiler if you haven't seen it yet. If you have seen it, you can just imagine, or maybe it'll be on the monitor up there. But if you don't even want to hear about it because you want to watch it, plug your ears, look at your phone, go to the bathroom, do what you need to do. But if you remember, Maui steals the heart, and Tefiti, the creator, disappears. Without her heart, darkness nearly takes over. And in the scene that we were going to show, there's this lava monster raging. And Moana and Maui have been trying to get past the monster to get to the heart. But then Moana notices something. And I don't know, can we play it on that monitor up there? Okay. Take a look at the very small screen.
They have stolen the heart from inside you. Not define you. This is not who you are. You know who you are. Who you truly are.
Thank you to our director and sound people. So she was always Tefiti. She just had her heart stolen, and she stopped looking like herself. The darkness had taken over temporarily. But Moana sees what's underneath. She sees Tefiti hidden in darkness and helps her see who she truly is. When we turn away from God and hide who we truly are, darkness and all, our hearts can't work properly. We can't participate in the tobe, the good that God is doing with us and in us and for us. So we need each other to help us turn back to God, to nourish one another so that when one person is feeling stuck, the rest of us are there to help remind them that our hearts are known and accepted as they are. And so this is my prayer for us this morning, Vox, that together as a community, we would remind one another of who we truly are so that we can turn our hearts back toward God and receive the good, the beauty, the love that God has for us. Amen.